Good afternoon, everybody. Hi, my name is Rachel, and as I mentioned before, I'm a member of the Biodynamic Association leadership team, and I'd like to welcome you to this conversation. Now, at the moment, none of you can hear each other, but soon you will be able to. So I'm just going to introduce the conversation for a minute, and then I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Thea. And then pretty soon you'll all be able to hear each other. So as a leadership team for the Biodynamic Association's education efforts, we've been working since the fall of 2012 to support the Biodynamic Education Program and help bring the Educators Collaborative into being. And I think you all know, because that our very first project for the Collaborative was to initiate a series of phone conversations with one another as members of the Collaborative, so that it allowed us to get to know each other a little bit and to understand a bit about each other's work as it relates to biodynamic education. This phone call is our first attempt at bringing the Collaborative together in a learning format, and we are experimenting with this very interesting way of working called the Maestro Conference. And we hope it's going to be successful, but later on we are going to be asking you for your feedback. How do you think this entire method worked? So I'm going to turn this phone call over to one of our colleagues, Thea, who is also the Director of Education for the Biodynamic Association, and she's going to take this call one step further, and she will, during the phone call, you will hear from each member of the current member of the leadership team. Okay, Thea.
Thanks, Rachel. Thank you everyone for coming on and joining this experiment with us. We're just starting to use this platform, Maestro Conference, that allows a lot of interactivity, and we're just kind of putting our toes in the water with what we can do with it, and if it goes well today, then we'll keep exploring new ways we can really interact with one another, even though we're all so spread apart geographically, finding ways to really interact. So today we're going to begin with a lecture from Corey Eichmann, who's going to talk about the seven life processes and learning processes. And then we're going to have some time for small group conversations. And as Rachel said, right now everyone's microphone is muted, so we can't hear you all. But when we have it's time for the small group conversations, you'll actually kind of be in a virtual room with a couple other people, and you'll be able to talk to and hear one another in a smaller context, so everyone gets the chance to really have a conversation where you can take some of the ideas that Corey is bringing and take them further. In the meantime, because your microphone is muted, if you're having any issues, if you can't hear something well or anything like that, at any time you can press 1 on your keypad, and that kind of raises your hand, and then I can check in with you and see what's going on. And also later, after we have the small group conversations, we'll have some time for harvesting with the whole group, and then we'll have be able to let everyone share with the whole group. So just so we can get a sense of everyone who's on the call, we're going to do a really brief round of introductions. We're just going to ask you to say where you're calling from and if you have an organization or firm that you're associated with. And those of us who are leading the call, we can see a list of everyone who's here. So I'm just going to say each person's name, and when you hear your name, if you could just say where you're calling from and your organization or firm, if there's an affiliation you want to share, then we can all get a sense of who's here on the call. And then we'll have more time when we're in small groups for you to introduce yourselves more extensively. So I'm going to turn everyone's microphone on. So Oops, except for a couple people who have some background noise. All right. So, Walter Mora, where are you calling from?
I am calling from Ecuador, the mountains of Ecuador, and our farm is called Finca Sagrada. And if you want to see our farm, you can go to my website, growcd.org.
Thank you. Monique Camp.
Hi there. I am in Sebastopol, California. That's Northern California. And the name of my farm is called Sophia's Garden.
Susan Westkirk.
Hi, I'm calling from Jamestown, Rhode Island, and the name of my not-for-profit is called Be Conscious. And I have a website. It isn't terribly active at the moment, but I'm in process of changing that.
Sally Voris.
Well, I'm calling from Taneytown, Maryland. It's near Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and the farm is White Rose Farm, and it's www.whiterosefarm.com.
Anne Russo.
Hi, everybody. We are calling from Quebec, Canada. Our farm's name is Ferme Cadet Roussel.
Jonathan Code.
Hi, I'm calling from Stroud in England, and I'm connected to the Crossfields Institute and work in biodynamic education in the England, both with apprentices and at Emerson College, and various other projects that we're just getting going.
Stefan Schneider.
Hello, everybody. I'm calling from Hawthorne Valley Farm. It's about 2 hours north of New York City in the Hudson Valley. And that's where I'm working, and I'm currently also serving as the chair of the board of the Biodynamic Association.
Malcolm Gardner.
Hi, I'm calling from Taconic, New York, in Columbia County. Don't have an affiliation formally except with the Hudson Valley Biodynamic Group that meets locally and makes preparations.
Ebert Kerman.
Hi, I'm calling from Kutztown, Pennsylvania. I'm the veterinarian at the Rodale Institute.
Heather Toma. Am I pronouncing your last name right?
Yes, thank you. I'm calling from Little Current in Ontario, Canada, and my farm is Loon Song Garden, and I'm also the education coordinator for the Ontario Biodynamic Society.
Robert King.
Hi, I'm in southeastern Vermont in Putney at Chosen Garden, which is a teaching garden for beginning gardeners.
Thomas. I don't know if Thomas can hear. Do you have a? I guess that's Tom Spaulding. Are you there, Tom?
I'm here.
Hi, Tom.
I was muted. I'm here now. I'm suffering from a nice little cold, so I apologize for the stuffy head here. I'm calling from Angelic Organics Association, which is Angelic Organics Farm and Learning Center, and I'm the executive director of the Learning Center, the education and training programs at the Angelic Organics Farm, and you can see us at www.learngrowconnect.org.
Glad to be. Don Peterson.
Yeah, head farmer for Angelic Organics, North Central Illinois. Just up the driveway from where Tom is right now, I think. And, you know, it's funny, all these farmers, every one of them, I want to know what the weather is like. That's always the custom when someone's calling from far away. You say, well, what's the weather like? So it's kind of drizzly here today. We still have snow banks along the road. And That's fine. That's the way springs are sometimes.
Lloyd Nelson.
Hi, I'm, the weather's nice over here. It's a little snow out here in western Colorado, and I have a, my company has a biodynamic spray service, along with prep making, consultations, and education.
Pat Fraser.
I'm calling from western Colorado. I have Peace and Plenty Farm, and I'm the president of the board of directors of Josephine Porter Institute, Virginia.
Jessica Brandt Seldenkirchen.
Hi, I'm calling from Fort Collins, Colorado. The weather is really nice, about 60 degrees and sunny, and we are at Crescent Farm, and we have a CSA as well as a kids' education program.
Matthew Boner, and please, how do you pronounce your last name?
Buchner.
Okay.
Yes. I'm calling from the Niagara region in Ontario, Canada, and I manage the biodynamic program at a winery called Taz. It's kind of a dreary day here today, but there's no snow on the ground, and
great. Thank you, everyone. It's quite a diverse group we have. I'm going to turn it over to Corey now for the presentation, and then after he's done them, we'll move into the small groups.
Thanks, Thea. Hi, everybody. I know a bunch of you, but not everyone. My name is Corey Eichmann, and I'm part of the education leadership team for the BDA. And I live in Grey County, Ontario, which for all of you Americans, when you think of what Canada is like, that's sort of the way it's like right now here. We still have about 5 feet of snow, and there's still snow falling at the moment, but it's supposed to turn to rain, so I'm looking forward to that. So this is definitely a new experience for me trying to do a talk over the phone, and just seeing your names and sort of knowing you but not really being able to get any direct feedback. So bear with me. I'll do the best I can. So hopefully everyone has had a chance to look at the reading that Thea sent around. It was part of a book called Awakening the Will by Conrad Van Houten. And it focused on the seven life processes and how they reflect into the seven learning processes. And I did also send a attachment around that sort of outlined it. And I'll go over that a little bit just to make sure we're all on the same page. A little bit of background. That book, Awakening the Will, if you do have a chance to look through it in its entirety, there's a lot of quite amazing and helpful things for adult education, and it's sort of part of a movement, I guess you call it, called New Adult Learning. And I took a course almost 10 years ago now on this new adult learning, and that part of the course, wasn't able to go through the whole course, but I did part of it, and the part that relates to what we're talking about today is what we did. But in that book, there's also quite a few other really interesting things, and maybe for future calls, we might be able to go into more of it. But I think one of the main things that we explored is this question of educating adults as opposed to educating children, how it can be different. And I think one of the main things that comes across is that when it's an adult educating or in an educational relationship with another adult, it's two fully developed individuals in this relationship. And when it's you're working with children, the children, you know, still in the process of incarnating their ego natures, there's a different process involved in that education. But when you're working directly with another adult, there's that real deep sense of equality that I think is encouraged through this new adult learning. And one of the other things, and I just want to touch on just briefly, in the book, Awakening the Will, is he talks about there being sort of three types of schools and three types of teachers in sort of an educational experience. And the first type is sort of what we're used to thinking of as a teacher, where there's it's a person who has a certain ability or has certain knowledge, who is, you know, a student or a participant comes to that person to, to enliven their skills and enrich their knowledge, and that often is through some kind of educational program or institute or a workshop or, you know, some sort of formal education process. But another of the schools is called the School of Life, and I heard one person refer to it as the School of Hard Knocks. And that's where life itself is a teacher, and the teachers are, you know, the beings of destiny, like what leads you from one experience to another. And then a third kind of school or kind of teacher is one's own individual spiritual development, and sort of you could call it sort of an esoteric learning. And in that instance, the teacher is each individual's guardian of the threshold. And what I find really interesting about looking at it this way is when we're, you know, human to human teaching, learning, relationship, you know, sometimes it's helpful to keep in mind that as we're creating a learning experience, there's also these other teachers that are in the background, like the teachers of destiny for each individual's life experience. But then also each individual has a guardian of the threshold that's acting as a deep teacher for their own personal development. And I find it really helpful just looking at that framework. And I don't want to go into that in so much detail, but I wanted to touch on it because it is explored in the Awakening the Will book, and I think it's definitely worth looking at. I guess I should mention, I'm going to be going over some things for about 20 minutes or so. And after that, we'll break into groups. So it's probably only about 15 minutes at this point, but just to give you guys a reference. Again, just to, if you have that attachment that was called life processes into learning processes, if you have it handy or can look at it, that might be helpful. And just to go through these learning, well, the life processes first. Steiner spoke about these life processes in a couple of places. He wrote about them in a book that actually he never finished, but it's been since published as one called Anthroposophy, a Fragment. So he talks about the life processes there. But he goes into more detail in a group of lectures called The Riddles of Humanity. And there it's from those lectures that's reprinted in the Awakening of the Will book. But later through those group of lectures, he delves a little more deeply into them. So, you know, this is just sort of an introduction. And these life processes are experienced by anything that's living. But if we relate it sort of to ourselves, breathing being the first life process where something is taken in from outside. And the breathing is one aspect, but you could also say eating or drinking. Like it's taking something in, a substance in from from external to us and taking it into our being. The warming process is an adjusting process where we as a being meets whatever is coming in. And it's described as warming because for the most part, depending on the temperature outside, but for the most part, the air that we're breathing in is cooler than what is our own body temperature. So the warming is part of mainly that breathing process. But sometimes if we're eating food that's hotter than our body, we actually have to cool it. So the warming could also be called warming and cooling. It's just adjusting where you're adjusting whatever has come in, and your inner being is meeting whatever's coming in. The nourishing process is a breaking down process. So whatever has come in, whether if it's air, it has to be broken into different components of carbon dioxide and oxygen and nitrogen and various components. The food has to be broken down into, you know, the fats and carbohydrates and all the different components that make up whatever it is that we've taken in. So the nourishing is definitely a sort of a breaking up process. And then the secreting is a central process in these seven life processes. That's the fourth one. And secreting is this assorting process where we make sort of decisions, our organism or whatever organism is, makes decisions as to what happens to the substances that have come in. The maintaining life process is where the individual being, so suppose you've eaten a carrot, you've broken it down, and you've decided where the different aspects are supposed to go. The maintaining is where your organism expresses itself again. So you don't reassemble everything and become a carrot again, but you're actually your own being and you're expressing that own being. And the growing process is one where you're then developing, and that can be developing capacities, physical abilities, developing organs, as in the case of the plant, growing in size as an organism gets bigger. And then the last life process, reproducing, that's where you are creating something new. You're reproducing another being in that life process. And Steiner talked about how these life processes can actually become ensouled, and that's part of how what gets expressed when they become learning processes. And so, you know, I made the list of the learning process again, and the first learning process is observing something. It could also be called experiencing something. So here you're taking it in, but you're taking it in with your soul, not with your body. So it's breathing in an experience of some kind. The warming process, as an ensouled process, is relating, and this has a lot to do with our astral body, our emotions. So, you know, when we're relating to something, we can be, you know, cold to it, which means we often put a wall up and we have this chill around it, or we can warm to it so that it actually is, we invite it in some way. So having this experience and then trying to relate ourselves to it in one way or another, and that's where our inner being is trying to meet what it is that's come in. The nourishing life process in learning is digesting and assimilating. So here's, you know, this is a often an intellectual process where we chew things over and sort of break them apart and try to understand them and process them and all these words that learning relates to very directly in their language relates to the life processes. And then again, the important sort of central process in this learning is that relates to secreting, this individualizing. And here, this is the individualizing is this real sort of ego place of our nature. So this is where we actually make it our own. Whatever it is, whatever experiences come in, the learning experiences come in, we somehow make it our own in this secreting process. And in the course that I took, this was talked about as a aha moment or an oh moment. It's where you have this inner light bulb go off, is another expression, or a lightning bolt flash, or these expressions where something has turned a corner and it's really internalized. And it's a very almost a sacred place in the learning realm, is this individualizing space. This is where I think there's a real component to adult education as opposed to working with children, is, you know, this sacred ground of this individualizing is something that we actually can't touch it as adults. It has to come from, you know, we can't touch it as teachers. It actually has to come from each individual. It's a very internal sacred space for this revelation or this internalizing. But, you know, the degree with which that manifest in someone has a lot to do with the first three of these learning processes. So the observing, the relating, and the digesting. And us as educators, we're really working on how do we structure our create an experience that helps and facilitates those first three processes that then helps the ego to actually grab hold of it. And to some extent, if the ego grabs hold of that experience, the last three processes, maintaining, growing, and reproduction, will actually come of themselves out of that own individual. And whereas with children, when we are working with children, the maintaining, growing, and reproducing, we really have to keep working through those stages, and helping them along through those stages. But to the degree which, you know, someone, a fellow adult, has really taken hold of it, they're going to carry those other learning processes on, the practicing, growing faculties, and creating. We can definitely create space to allow those things to happen, but you know, to the degree that the ego has actually really taken hold of it, the other three are actually going to come somewhat on their own. But the maintaining life process is relates sort of to practicing. So if you've learned something and you've sort of taken it in and individualized it, you're going to have to do some repetition and do some kind of ongoing work to practice, to really make it your own, as your own being, your own self-expression. And then out of that comes the growing life process, which is growing faculties, acquiring abilities or new understandings and abilities, which then can lead to the reproducing life process, which for learning is actually doing something creative, creating something out of your own self. So that's those are, again, sort of a summary of the life processes and learning processes. And this is pretty strange, just talking on the phone nonstop and not being able to actually get any sense of if anybody's even listening. But it's a very interesting process. So hopefully it works. We'll hear from you pretty soon. One of the things that I did want to I wanted to bring, and on that attachment that got sent around, I listed out some what could be called tools to structure an educational experience. So when you're, you know, trying to create an educational experience, you have to do it one way or another. So you have to somehow structure the experience to meet the audience or the group of people or just the individual, however it's set up. And there's these different tools have a great impact on how that these learning processes are able to take form. And I wanted to just sort of go through one example to just get some ideas. So I wanted to give the example of lecturing, because that's what I'm doing right now in a strange telephone way. When you're lecturing, that's a certain tool that you can use as a educational format, and it's a very common one, and those of us who've read Steiner know there's a lot of lecturing that goes on. But initially, the lecturing, you could look at it as having something to do with the first life process, the breathing, or as the first life process and the first learning process, observing. So there's, like in this case, where I'm just talking on the phone and you guys are passively listening, that's very much a observing part of the process. However, one thing that happens with lecturing and anytime you're using language is you can shape the language in such a way that actually helps the warming process. So a lot, lecturing especially, when you're using different tones and your emotions are coming through, that actually allows the listener, it can help the whole warming process, to help someone relate to it. So the way you can emotionally connect to your audience, the group of people, that actually helps with the warming process. So lecturing is not just about breathing, it can also be about warming and relating. And your choice of how you, what you say and then how you say it has a huge impact on people's ability to warm, because you could, present a lecture in a dogmatic and intellectual way that actually creates walls for people and creates this cooling effect where already at that point you've kind of created a barrier to their ability to learn. And so part of the craft of lecturing is to create this emotional connection that actually helps with the warming process. And often in the middle of a lecture, if someone, oftentimes will use humor or will tell some personal story, that helps with that whole warming process, because it allows, and doesn't have to be in any kind of manipulative way. It can just be a way of, again, this relating aspect. But I think lecturing also has the potential to already start touching on the nourishing, because if you are going along with a certain series of thoughts that follow a certain logical order and people are able to actually follow that logical sequence, that sort of logical sequence helps create the nourishing process. And people, again, will have to do some of it on their own. You shouldn't do break it down for them too much, because it does have to be sort of their own activity. But at the same time, the way you put out a series of concepts can have a huge helping with that nourishing process. And so, but like I mentioned before, the secreting process, the individualizing process, is sacred ground that you can't touch with a lecture. It ends up having to come from the individual. And when you're in front of a group of people and giving a presentation, you can see those little light bulbs going off. And sometimes, people will even audibly go, "Oh, aha!" That make these sounds that you realize that individualizing is starting to happen. But sometimes you can be in a group and you realize that it's not really happening much at all. And sometimes then you have to backtrack and go, go back to some other kind of improvised warming or improvised nourishing process that sort of can help bring that out. And you know, in this case where I'm just talking on the phone and I have no response from you, I actually can't read that whatsoever. So, but it when you're actually in front of people, it can sometimes, you know, watching for that individualizing in the group of people you're working with can really give you hints as to how much do you have to go back and work more with different the previous processes. But what I think is quite exciting is that these different tools, and I gave you a list, there's 16 of them, but there's other ones too that I couldn't think of at the time and you guys might think of, that are like the palette of the educator, and it's a real creative work of an educator to take these tools and see what makes sense in what circumstances, how do these different tools affect the learning process, and you know, I think part of the art of education is knowing when to use what, and sometimes having to repeat certain things, and sometimes you know, doing a lot of improvisation, but having a handle on how these different tools affect the learning processes, I think, is really helpful. So what I thought would be a great little discussion for the groups would be these questions, which hopefully you have, but I'll go ahead and read them off again just in case you don't have that in front of you, but hopefully you have something to write with. If you can get these down, at least someone within your group has them. So the questions for the small group conversations, the first question, describe a learning experience, you either as a facilitator or the person learning, that resonated with you. How did this relate to the life and learning processes? So really think of a personal experience that really had a great educational component to it. And then how does that relate to the life and learning processes? Second question, and what tools were used to create this learning experience? And how did that relate to the learning processes? Because each of these tools does have an effect on the learning processes, but like I mentioned with lecturing, it can sometimes be several of the learning processes depending upon how you bring it out, and it's not a fixed thing, but some of them do really relate to certain processes. And the third question, what were the challenges this learning experience was dealing with, and how was it successful? In what way was it successful? So I think what's going to happen, I see Thea has already broken everyone up into groups, potentially. It's not happened yet, but maybe I think you'll be getting into groups soon. But Thea, do you want to say anything more about this process of going into groups?
Yeah. So everyone is in a group now with two other people. We ended up having 21 people, not counting me and Corey. So we have 7 groups of 3 people, and you're in a group already. And so we would suggest that each of you take a couple of minutes to introduce yourself to the other people in your group so you all know who else you're talking to, and then talk about these 3 questions, each kind of sharing your own response to that and then having some time for discussion. We have a total of 20 minutes for these small group conversations, so if you take, you know, maybe 5 minutes total for the introductions, then you have 15 more minutes for people to share and the conversation. And I'll give you a warning, you'll hear a little bell 5 minutes before the time is up so that you can talk about sort of what are the gems that you, from your conversation that you might want to share with the full group, because after this we'll have some time for
people to share with the whole group. So you're in the small group now, and both Corey and I will be kind of walking the room virtually. If you could imagine you're at seven different tables, we'll be kind of walking to different tables and listening to what you're saying, and we'll announce ourselves so you know if we're in your room. And again, if anyone's having any issues, just press 1 on your keypad and I'll go into your room. And or if you don't have the questions and you need a reminder of them, anything like that, just press 1 on your telephone keypad, and then we'll work to address anything. So let's go ahead and get started with introductions. Hi, everyone. We are going to wrap up now. You'll still be in your small group, so people in your small group can hear you if you need any last-minute wrap-up. But I'm going to turn it over to Laura to lead the harvest, and I'll be turning on people's microphones as you're ready to share something.
Hey. Well, hi, everyone. This is Laura Riccardi-Livers, and I'm the last member of the leadership team for this education initiative of the BDA. I wasn't in the introductions, so but I was there. But anyway, I live in Kentucky, and I work on a farm called Fox Hollow Farm. I run the biodynamic program for the grass-fed beef operation. And I also own BioAg Resources, making preparations and sharing them regionally. So now we're going to the harvest part of the call, where we want to be able to share some gems from our individual group discussions. And we don't need to hear from everybody, but if you have something that you want to share, what you do is press 1 on your telephone keyboard, and Thea will be able to call on you and then turn your microphone on. We'll go ahead and open that up, and whoever would like to share, press the number 1.
All right, John Peterson is ready to start us off. Thanks, John.
Well, I'm just going to highlight something that I shared with my group, which is that I've been reading quite a bit of Steiner recently about social life, and something that's really stood out for me is that the most important thing about the conference or the gathering is the people in the room, and the most important thing that happens is what happens between the people in the room, and that the new temple of today is what happens between individuals when they come together and communicate and share and build something. So a lot of my presenting leans on that or relies on that to bring people together in these groups and have them become more aware of how special they are individually and how special the person across from them is. And there are a lot of processes there that Corey mentioned that are activated out of that. So that's what I want to bring up. Well, I could actually say every single one of the life processes are engaged in that interaction between human beings and reminding them of their tremendous specialness and also of the person across from them and their specialness.
All right. Laura, you can just say something. Your microphone's on all the time.
Okay, I didn't want to cut in front of anybody. the one thing that I was really happy to hear from my group was there was a shared sense of warmth that everyone could relate to in how they experience in teaching or in facilitating or instructing, is that there's this warming process that we could all identify with as being so important and exhibited in our experiences that really helps the rest of it. So that's really, it follows suit to what was brought, that's the beginning of the process at the beginning.
So Sally Voris has something she wants to share.
Well, I'm hoping that Jonathan from our group will summarize our conversation, but I just wanted to say how lovely it is to be connected to such a variety of people from around the world. I mean, I'm in a fairly isolated area, and I don't have a chance to talk biodynamics much with local folks, so it just was really warming to have such a conversation.
Yeah, it's really wonderful to having heard people from various different groups, just all the conversations that were going on. We have Monique and then Jonathan. Go ahead, Monique.
I just wanted to say we spent our whole time basically sharing our biographies, but in the conclusion, what I realized was that we had in fact gone through this whole, we had used all the tools of the life process and the learning process, and basically it was through, as has been said by almost everybody now, the warming process that we were able to, I feel, create a very endearing relationship between the three of us, Walter, Hugh, and I. I feel like I have new friends and new companions on this journey, and it was a living experience. It was a life teaching, witnessing myself in the midst of this conversation, and utilizing this warmth process to begin and build and grow and create this beautiful relationship. And what John just said about the new temple, I just get it. I had an aha. As soon as he said that, I realized that's why it is so dear when we come together and we can relate on this level through that warming process, that we do in fact create the new temple, the sacred temple on earth. So thank you all so, so much for the opportunity to consciously practice this in this very unique way.
Jonathan.
Okay, I just, Sally kind of kicked the ball into my court, and John opened it up, a beautiful one on the social, because that's in a way what emerged between our conversation was a couple of things. One was that I think all of us shifted the language a little bit, or the term from being teachers to being facilitators, and I think we were becoming comfortable with seeing ourselves as facilitators of social processes, social learning processes. And I've got a Norwegian friend who likes to make kind of a one-liner. He says, "Farmers don't grow carrots," and then he kind of stops, and you've got to figure out where he's going with it. But really what he's kind of pointing at is that farmers create the conditions for the carrot to come in and the being of the carrot to grow. And coming out of more of the maybe the education, teaching, learning process, that's what started to emerge a bit, was that we really kind of were finding a space where we were looking at what it's like to not teach but to facilitate, to create conditions and opportunities for something to emerge between people. That was I used the picture of lighting fires, both literally but also kind of as what emerges when a process goes as one would hope. This warming leads really to kind of a something being lit in each other, but lit in the group. And that to that's definitely the thrill of working in this realm, is to be able to keep finding out how you can nurture that spark and have something come out that's both connected to the land but is living in the social realm in an inspired way. So I hope my group is happy with that little take on what
pretty good. Pretty good. Well done. And Russell.
Hello, it's Wolfgang Eichinger speaking here from the Farm Cadet Russell. I'd like to sum up our group discussion. So am I online so that everybody can hear me right now?
Yeah, everyone can hear you.
Okay. So it was Robert King and Dana Burns discussing with us in the group. Robert King is from Vermont and does gardening workshops for, as he said, total beginners, and offers theoretical but also a lot of hands-on experience. And his tools, let's say, are to get the people to observe what is happening in the gardens. So the people are walking through the gardens twice a day to observe the changes. And the courses are mainly for, as I understood it, urban refugees who like to get a connection to the earth or to the soil again, which was at the end of our discussion, let's say, a key point for all three of us, for all three groups, because also Dana works in farm-based education. She's right now in New Zealand, but also in Wisconsin. And she facilitates teaching for other people that do courses. And she's a veterinarian, so she worked a lot with animals and taught the people how to milk cows, and which is also a hands-on experience. And then I explained my experience here at the farm, as I'm here for 3 weeks right now, and I have a hands-on experience since the first day. And if we think about the steps that were explained before of the learning processes, it's a huge amount of intake that happens right now, I think, for all of us here, because we are getting to know each other right now. There's a big group of woofers and also employees here at the farm that work together, and we share our experiences also from our backgrounds, and as well as the experiences we make during the work process here. And Anne and Arnaud are the two, let's say, leaders on the farm, or teachers that teach us how to do the work properly here, so that, we can harvest what we saw, what we are cultivating here. And I think for us all, it's a very nourishing process because we share so much together here. And we're growing within and with each other. And, yeah, we'll see what we reproduce this year together. Okay, I think that's all for now. Thanks a lot.
Does anyone else have something to add?
There's several groups that we didn't hear from anyone in the group. If someone wants to step up and share a little bit.
Thea, do you see Susan has her hand up?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
there you go,
I
Susan.
Could...
You have a microphone now.
Okay, thank you. Well, our group had kind of different lenses into the level that we're all working in. Mine is more of a just a general introduction to people who are unaware or just starting to connect to nature or bees or biodynamics or gardening in any way. And the common thread with the three of us was, I think, using the word warmth in a different way, but enthusiasm, both enthusiasm for the material that was going to be kind of presented and the enthusiasm for the individuals who were participating in the group. And I think in our call, we experienced being heard and speaking into this enthusiastic, warming space where we were kind of present our experience. And because of the quality of being heard, we could understand fairly well what all three of us were doing. And there, added to the enthusiasm was the importance of kind of asking questions, sometimes at the beginning of a presentation or during a workshop, and in some cases, as with Mark, where he's with people for an extended period of time, that these questions then go into the night and there's an opportunity for the question and to be informed by everyone individually and as a group, and so that there's an interweaving of what I would call is a echoing of this a piece or this temple that was first spoke about, that this kind of invisible temple that we're all experiencing and creating as we experience it. And also, it wasn't exactly said, but the way it was, the way I heard my colleague speak was that they weren't the experts. They were presenting, and if the material was being held by the group that they were presenting to, it came more out of a facilitating than being an expert. And various tools were used, but I think the key here is enthusiasm for relationship to material and enthusiasm for other. Thank you. Maybe Mark and Lloyd want to round that out. I don't know.
Well, it is 2 minutes till 3:30, so that is all we have time for this session. But you know, we can continue this conversation individually. Everybody has each other's phone numbers and emails in the document that Thea sent out.
And so we're going to have to close this for now, but we're hoping that this has been valuable to everyone, and we would love to hear what worked and what didn't work, any suggestions, and anything that you'd like to see in the future. So we'll be sending a link with a short survey after the call to ask folks for feedback. And you're also welcome to call or email any of us on the leadership team with your thoughts.